republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin, I'd like to ask everybody for a moment of silence for President Bush. And I just want to say that watching part of it today about civility and kindness and gentleness and how we treat each other, let's hope that it passes and people listen. So, in his memory. Okay, thank you. Do we have our high school representative here?
We do.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're all doing well, and I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving. So the annual Fall Sports Awards ceremony was great, and students, coaches, and parents really enjoyed the event, so thank you to everyone who made that possible. We had our POB Engineering Awareness event, and that was held on November 27th. As for some upcoming events, we have our orchestra and jazz concert, and that will be held on December 12th at 7 p.m. at Matlin, so we hope you'll all join us for that wonderful concert. And on December 15th, DECA Regional will be taking place, and the weekend of the 14th and 15th will be the annual METMONK conference, where students will debate many pressing issues from their assigned country, so that will be a wonderful event to attend. Thank you very much. Have a nice night.
Thank you. Our middle school representative.
Hi, I'm Arianna Levy, Student Council President, POBMS. November is a month characterized by gratitude and giving back, and POBMS fully embraced that theme. Our November extended map took place on Friday, November 9th, with the annual Veterans Tea. Veterans from the community were served by our map leaders, including myself, and we had a great time. Ms. McComsky's sixth grade chorus also performed a number of patriotic selections, some that the audience even sang along to. God Bless America echoed through the main lobby, carried by both students and faculty voices, including Dr. Lewis. POBMS is proud to continue a longstanding tradition to commemorate Veterans Day and all the veterans have sacrificed to keep us safe and protected at home. Staff members also participated in a staff-wide fundraiser, chipping in $5 to put towards supermarket gift cards for veterans at Beacon House. One of POB sixth grade teachers, Ms. Klein, was able to purchase 10 $25 gift cards with the donations collected from our staff. Our second stream day took place on Monday, November 19th. This year's theme was Heroes Are Those Who Make Peace and Build. Students spent the entire day addressing one sustainable development goal established by the United Nations. They worked cooperatively in their stream day classrooms to address goals, global issues including, but not limited to, gender equality, affordable and clean energy, and quality education. Throughout the day, students also attended two stream day assemblies, Wacky Science and the Laser Light Show. While students worked on their global problems, they were supported not only by POBMS faculty members, but also student representatives from Mr. Tesser's AP Capstone Research class at the high school. A big thank you to all, including Ms. Drexel, our assistant principal, the PTA, and the STREAM team, who made this day possible. Matlin's TAG collecting toys for its annual toy drive to benefit Cohen Children's Hospital. The 7th grade family and consumer science classes are hosting the Matlin Canned Food Drive. Donations of non-perishable food items can be placed in the Matlin Canned Bins located in each house. They will be collecting food items into January. All donations will be delivered to the Mid-Island Food Pantry. Additionally, Matlin Middle School Service Club collected 219 pounds of candy for Operation Gratitude. They are currently working on a fundraiser to help the victims of the California wildfires. Earlier in November, POBMS and Matlin 5th Grade Project Challenge students took a trip to the United Nations building. Students toured the UN, visited the famous assembly rooms, and listened to how the 193 nations came together on all kinds of world affairs. In December, the middle schools are looking forward to hearing the sounds of the season brought to us by our music teachers and students. We are approaching the end of 2018 enthusiastically and eager to continue a great school year.
Thank you so much. Any board announcements? Susan?
Wishing everybody who celebrates a happy Hanukkah. I also would like to announce that the POB's Central School District Blood Drive is just a week away. It will be at the POB Middle School on December 11th from 9 to 9:30. And basically, this is the best way to give a gift of life in this holiday season. You can schedule an appointment through Julie Kessler. There's links to it in Facebook, and I'm sure there will be a few other places that will be coming forward if you want to schedule, or you can always drop by. They'll never say no to a donor.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Lauren?
Last week, I went to Engineering Awareness Night at the high school. It was wonderful. I love watching the K through 12 all interact, no matter how old you are, even my age. You were amazed to see all the students, just including myself, because I'm always eager to learn, just what our schools are capable of, and watching the younger kids, like, just so anxious to get to the high school to be a part of such an incredible group of POBOTs. So it was really awesome, and I look forward to the next one.
Debbie? This week, Dr. Lewis told us that ballots and other election materials for school district elections will need to be produced both in Spanish and, of course, in English. It just seems to me that in a community like ours, where we have a very small Hispanic population, and this is an unfunded mandate, I'm not quite sure why we need to expend money to produce it in Spanish. I mean, if you look at our demographics, it probably makes more sense to produce it in another language other than Spanish. So I was wondering if the legislative committee could perhaps write a letter to our legislators, you know, talking about this situation and seeing if there's anything that can be done. Do we have any idea how much this will cost the district?
We actually do.
You'll see it in your budget because we were preparing the budget. Jean, do you remember what the increase is?
But how many ballots do we have to produce? Because I think we have to produce 110% of something.
You know, we haven't been doing that. We don't have to. I've been speaking to
Ms.
Allo, and we're still waiting for some more guidance on it. But
Jean,
would you speak into the
mic?
Yeah, you always only get us.
Okay. I have been speaking.
So
with
we'll have
Ms.
to
Allo.
Find out how many and the cost
okay.
of it.
Yes.
Okay, thank
right.
you.
You'll see it reflected in your budget.
Yes.
The Board of Ed's budget will
okay.
be increased. Significantly.
Yes.
Can you just send that to me, and I'll use that to craft a letter? Thank you.
I think we should also, if anybody wants to make calls to your local state representative, this is a good cause to do it, because this is just another burden that's really not fair, especially when there's a cap, and we don't need it. So we would appreciate that. Dr. Lewis.
I think echoing the POBOTs, last week. It's just wonderful to see alumni come back who have gone through the POBOTs and are now engineers and are now coming back to mentor the younger students. And they were so proud to let me know what the impact has been of our POBOTs program. Equally exciting is we sent several students to Allstate. They were stuck, actually, with the weather. Coming home, it was difficult coming home because there were no planes flying out, but we got them home. But Christopher Shin was the second chair violist for Allstate. That's an amazing thing to think about. You know, we've had, and of course it's Mr. Rubin's student, so we want to honor him and Mike Rogers and all of the teachers who brought him to such an outstanding level of performance. But we had five students also of in all states. So we really do represent a good percentage of those of the choir and the orchestra. Just so proud of our music program.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any other? No? Okay. Moving on to our reports and discussions. First report is going to be on strategic plans.
So the principals have been diligent about creating strategic plans that are aligned with the board's goals. So I will ask for the principals to come forward. We'll begin with the high school. I think the high school or the elementary.
Yeah.
Which
high
one?
School.
High school first? Who's first?
I got yelled at by high school.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever is on the PowerPoint, we'll just begin with that. So then we'll just ask them to come forward and present their strategic plans. And thank you so much for being here. And realize that the board did get very detailed plans, but these are the highlights of their strategic plans because that is what will drive the work of the principals for the year.
Okay, good evening, everybody. It's great to see you all. Oh, it's not up there, though. Well, hello, everyone.
It's a great dress you have.
As it's coming up, everybody has copies of it, but the strategic plan for the high school this year is really very, very much focused on the social and emotional needs of the students, while at the same time trying to challenge them outside of the box to be more civic-minded citizens, so events and activities both inside the classroom as well as outside of the classroom arena are in the works. One of the major things that we're going to be working on this year is our involvement with the entire, actually, school community, so we're encouraging everybody to come out for it, is the Profile of a Graduate initiative of the district. That's been in the talks for several years now, but we're looking forward to the community forum on January 14th when we will be continuing our work on it and really getting some input from all the other constituent groups. We're also going to be working on public speaking skills with our students and encouraging them to take more active leadership roles within our school as well as outside of our school, doing more community service-minded activities. So we're going to be working with Mr. Braco and the health department to really fine-tune those opportunities. As you all know, the Twilight program is brand new at the high school this year to respond to our students who really are in need of an alternate way of learning, of attending school. And our program is growing. It started off slow, and we anticipated that as the year went on, more students were going to find that this is actually a good way of handling it for them. And we have a great team of teachers that are working on it as well as leaders. So we're looking forward to giving you an update and make some recommendations for the next school year with regard to Twilight. Talking about events like the Kindness Club as well as the Guidance Department's initiative showing of angst, both for all of our students as well as for the community at the Parent Academy night, are just some ways that we are working towards improving the social and emotional needs of our students and responding to that. In addition to that, you'll see also the Room to Breathe room that we discussed at the high school, which we're really excited about. We are progressing on that, and we're working with the art department, who have been coming up with our design plans for it. And they had some difficulties with getting some of the materials from a company that we're limited in companies that make the materials that they wanted. But we're working on getting that soon because we really want to get that up and going soon. But that's going to be our plan, hopefully, over the next vacation, is for all of that work to get completed. In addition to that, we're working on the different school safety measures that have been implemented throughout the high school over the summer vacation. We, as you all know, we moved towards the ID cards just a couple of weeks ago, and they're going really very well, all things anticipated. And I'm only hoping that's going to be even better in the future as we give greater use to the system. Paying attention to student voices, of course, is critical to the process. As you know, we are taking a look, which you will see in the next last item on there, is working towards potentially creating a brand new cafeteria for the high school. And we are including the student voices there as well. So we are very excited about the many renovation projects that we have in store for us, and we are planning different ways and how we're going to respond to them. For example, when the new windows come in, and we're going to be talking to our middle school colleagues who went through that, as well as I think some of the elementary too. But in addition to that, we just started the auditorium. Today was the first day of it. After school today, the auditorium was officially shut down. So I didn't see anybody placing any bids for any of the stadium seats like they did for the Mets, but there are still some available. No, I think I could still get you some. The dumpster around the back has a whole bunch. All right, well, thank you. We're very excited about the strategic plan for the high school, and if you have a moment to take a look at the rest of it, we have a lot of things in store. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you to the board and to our central office cabinet. The building plans for The building plans for Matlin are focused on three elements: the whole child and social emotional learning, literacy, and safety and security. You'll notice in bullet one, I'm going to try to make this as concise as possible. In the area of the whole child, we implemented the mental health screening for all our seventh graders and viewed the documentary Angst so that we can extend a conversation about how real and common anxiety is among our young people. Also, that first bullet focuses on empowering teachers to provide instructional approaches that develop reading and offer various writing tasks to develop writing and offering reading choices in the library by leveled books. Lastly, in that first bullet, part of the challenge in middle school is benchmarking students and targeting skill development and having leveled interventions in addition to AIS strategies as well that will help them to succeed. Bullet two reads, provide students with more opportunities for personalized learning experiences using flexible and adaptable seating in classrooms, library media center, and the cafeteria. And I just want to amplify a couple of things with that. Providing opportunities for students in these personalized experiences really gets them more engaged in the learning process, and therefore we're able to not just engage the kids, but also get a better learning activities in class as well. Bullet number three focuses on having discussions with teachers revolving around the process of learning that happens in post-observations, and it also happens at faculty meetings. We focus on conversations that have to do with Bloom's taxonomy, higher order thinking skills, and of course using feedback appropriately. Bullet number four provides our goal in middle school is to provide students opportunities for leadership. We give kids opportunities in student council. Our kids are part of our site-based committee, and we also have a monthly CAUGHT demonstrating pride awards as well in order to engage students in those kinds of activities. In bullet number four, the focus is the practice of inclusivity in middle school as opposed to exclusivity, using our common language pride. We have Pride Week. We have our Unity Day. We take great pride, pardon the pun, in No Place for Hate and having activities that include the peace sign activity that was a very, very big hit this past last month. Bullet number five focuses on a steering committee that was just created. We're going to be meeting later on this week, actually. There's about 70 members of a committee that includes staff, parents, students from both middle schools that focus on developing leadership in children, in middle school children. And the last bullet focuses on our strength, our idea of strengthening schools and creating a sense of community and communicating with parents in terms of having practice drills. We're working with the Nassau County Police Department, also working with Chris Donnarumma, our Assistant Superintendent of Student Services and Safety, and we're always looking to improve our building infrastructure, updating classrooms, LGI, and provide air conditioning updates in Central Park. So that those are basically the goals for Matlin this year. Thank you.
Okay. So many of, actually, the three areas of focus at Plainview Old Bethpage Middle School mirror those that are the areas of focus at Matlin this year. So as Ms. Dr. Coladonato said, social-emotional learning, literacy, and safety and security are the three areas that we chose to focus on at the middle school. Many of the items mentioned by both Mr. Murray and Dr. Coladonato are reflected in what the strategic plan for POB Middle School is. We also implemented the mental health screening for our 7th graders in health classes. We showed the angst video to our 7th and 8th graders and provided them with an opportunity to talk in small groups afterward. And we've also really made it our job to increase student voice. So for the first year since, well, certainly since I've been here, we held elections for our student council. In fact, Ariana Levy, who spoke earlier, is our student council president this year. We've also tried to really increase the amount of importance that our Hawk Award winners receive, or rather recognition. Hawk Awards are Helping All with Kindness Awards, where we, similar to what Dr. C said earlier, recognize kids when they're caught doing something nice or good when they think nobody's watching. And at our last PTA meeting, we invited all the Hawk Award winners and their families to come be recognized at that meeting. And in so doing, helped to increase the amount of publicity that they got and to give them another opportunity to be seen and heard. We have incorporated mindfulness activities not only in our MAP classes, but also at every faculty meeting and when we've been meeting with our teams. So if you come to one of our faculty meetings, if you're there for the first 5 minutes and everybody's sitting in silence with their eyes closed, that's why. As was said earlier by Ariana, we recently held our second annual Stream Day, and we worked off of the energy that last year's Stream Day provided for us and helped to make sure that this year's was even better. But as is the case with my teachers and Mrs. Drexel and the PTA, before the day was done, we had a list of things that we want to do. I don't want to say better, but better. Next year, because I don't want to say it because you really, it was phenomenal. The kids loved it. We had great help from the high school students who came down from the high school for the day. We had administrators all over the building all throughout the day. The kids really were able to get a lot out of it. And the one big takeaway is helping the students to understand budgeting next year and have them have some sort of a currency before they get to their projects, which I think in itself will be a lesson for the day that I might need to take part in myself. We this week are going to be working on the first steering committee meeting for the Leader in Me. We have a group of students in 7th and 8th grade, staff, parents, and other community constituents coming together on Thursday and Friday to discuss how we as a district are going to move forward with the Leader in Me program, which is born out of Stephen Covey's work with the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is timeless. In terms of literacy, we've worked to make sure that literacy is a focus in all of our grade levels and in each discipline throughout the course of the year. We've incorporated benchmarking again in 5th and 6th graded, but streamlined some of the processes so that teachers were out of their classes for less time than they have been in the past. And I want to thank Eileen and Nino for her work in that, because without her help, it wouldn't have happened as quickly and efficiently as it was. And the more quickly and efficiently you get that work done, the more quickly and efficiently you get to use the information to inform instruction and help students. And so we are also working on improving our AIS strategies so that students are identified more quickly, they are provided with the help that they need in a more effective way, and then brought back into the mainstream so that they can have their full day of scheduling of specials. And so within the next 2 weeks, both middle schools will be having our mid-year AIS meetings where we determine based on first marking period scores and how students are faring and teacher recommendations, whether they need to continue, stop, change, or start an AIS program. As far as safety and security in the middle school, we have been also working very closely with Mr. Donnarumma's office to make sure that we are up to par and ready to go if there is an emergency in our building. We have started thinking about our reunification process if there is an event where one of the schools needs to either evacuate to our building or we need to evacuate to another building. And so we have the next meeting scheduled. I believe Dr. Clark has it in her phone on December 13th, where we're going to next talk about that, and it will be discussed at faculty meetings coming up. Also at POB Middle School, after the windows were finished, we started with the auditorium. So I have all the info you might need, Mr. Murray. Our auditorium is slated to be done just after the new year so that if all goes well, we can have our drama production of Once Upon a Mattress in late January/early February. We also are hoping to have air conditioning in our auditorium and in our cafeteria, and we are looking forward to having our doors replaced as well as the new security measures on all our exterior windows coming up shortly. And that's it. Should I take notes? He's right there.
Good evening. Like my colleagues here, we are also taking our lead from the board goals and social emotional learning and instruction of our students. This year at Judy Jacobs Parkway, we continue to work with our district literacy coordinator, Eileen Nanino, who has made a nice connection with our school and our teachers. Along with Leah Mercantini, we're doing professional development that it continues to enhance the workshop model and to look to unpack the standards and create more appropriate and beneficial grade-level learning objectives. Time spent for teachers really honing down on what exactly it is I'm trying to teach my children. I think the conversations I have with my teachers is often like, oh, it's really that simple, just get to that point. And having the time spent with Eileen and with Leah helps bring that all back in, and it's a nice refreshment. Last year we did it with grades 2 and 4. This year we're working with grade 3. Another place that Joanna and I have been working on at JJP is our RTI, the process we use for RTI in our building and through the district. We've done a lot of work so far to streamline the RTI process, including putting all of our documents on Google and sharing them, which, believe it or not, has made a tremendous impact on helping everyone who's involved, service providers and teachers, able access to the information and data on their kids. So we're also working with Dr. O'Mara and the district RTI committee to make sure that we are all on the same page in terms of our RTI. I know you are all aware, as we are, that we are doing our math pilot this year. We have teachers at JJP, 2 on every grade, with the exception of grade 1, which all 3 of the teachers are piloting because there's only 3 there. We're giving them opportunities to talk to each other. We're listening and listening and listening. We're working very closely with Genevieve and with Dr. O'Mara to make sure that we, when this is all said and done, we have the best program for our children, with the emphasis that it's a program while we continue to teach to the standards. So that's the message that we keep giving to our teachers. It's an interesting process, I have to tell you. A lot of good conversations going on. Last year we started doing school moves, which is a movement-based behavioral sort of getting the mind going program that our PT, Dr. Rachel Gambino, got in place for us. I know that she did it over at Old Beth Page, and she brought it over to JJP. The kids love it. Our entire back wall has school movements. The kids come from the kindergarten. They come from first grade, second, third, fourth. They're always out there jumping up and down, tapping, counting, doing their multiplication tables and getting their facts in place. And to A1, everyone has said this is a great investment, Greg. Thanks for giving it to us. So I thank Rachel. We are continuing. This is our second year with Responsive Classroom. 2 years ago, I went with a little team from JJP into the city, and we started there. Last year, Karen headed over to Pasadena, and we had a number of teachers going there also. And these are teachers who went in the heat of the summer and took time out of going to Tobe Beach to learn and to find out what was the best thing for their kids. And again, to a one, not one person has said to me, this is ridiculous, I'm not doing it. They are from the most senior teacher, most seasoned, to the newest teacher. They are loving it. So we're pushing it, and we're doing it again. One of the biggest pieces is a morning meeting, an opportunity for everyone to come in, sit down, greet each other. They all, good morning, Alice. Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Jean. Good morning, Alice. It is adorable, and it gives every child an opportunity to open their mouth and make a sound and speak, and no one gets caught or stuck or lost or falls through a crack or anything else. Everybody. It's really a very nice thing to watch. And then there's closing meeting, which is a very nice time to bring everyone together, go through what had happened during the day, remind ourselves that we are a community, that we work, we support each other, and make sure you have everything all packed up before you get onto the bus. So I'm very happy with what's going on with it, and we're going to continue moving on with it. So we talk a lot about mindfulness, and I'm a new convert to this. I took part of, and someone, and Alice's friends, Jim did too, a PhD program that he was, study he was doing on mindfulness for administrators. And Alice and Jim and I, last year for 8 weeks, got mindful. And I'm going to tell you, it helped me in some very difficult moments, which comes along the way. I see the merit in it, and we're going for it. We're going to have some PD happening in the school in January. And we did a survey with the teachers, asking them about when their children are most anxious, when are they most anxious. We have the survey results to go over with the staff to show them that this is really something that we can use. And I'm really hoping, we had a great response to it. I'm expecting that the teachers are going to latch on to this and help their children along with those sorts of devices. And also, we continue to monitor the OHM science curriculum and the next-gen science standards we did in K-1 and 2 this year, 3 and 4 next year, with Emily Kang, some of the inquiry-based science work that's being done there, learning through experience, learning through figuring out yourself, learning through making it part of what you do. So, and that's just a little bit of what we're doing over at JJP, just like that much. And we're also doing a lot of the security. I did not put it on here, but we are involved with reunification. Did a lot of work on that today. I'm going to show it to you, Chris, later. And making sure that we have enough, all of our drills in place, and we are as safe and sound as we possibly can be. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, good evening, everyone. As we continue at Old Beth Page with goal-based instruction focused on the standards, we are using a workshop model in reading, writing, and mathematics. In math workshop, 19 out of 19 classes are still using stations. We have 13 out of 19 using Pilot, either in Visions 2.0 or the Go Math program. But the station work has really done a phenomenal job in individualizing student instruction, providing enrichment opportunities, building upon fluency. So that's been very powerful. We began that work 2 years ago. Last year, we ensured that every class was using stations. So in our reflections last year, we met with the staff and we said, what is our next step? And next steps for us consisted of creating a math vertical articulation team. So those conversations started in June. We sent teachers to conferences. Teachers researched books that they wanted to read together as a group. We have identified teachers on each grade who are meeting regularly, and we are talking with other districts who've begun the journey specifically in math workshop. It's been a really exciting journey for us so far. Once a month, we have professional hours set aside for teachers to meet with their grades or a grade above or below, or a grade on each, a teacher on each grade, just to talk about the different gaps in instruction, what students are misinformed about, some of the misconceptions that kids have when it comes to math workshop. So it's been very powerful. Just last week, we had kindergarten and first grade together, and teachers who went to a conference were sharing some things that they brought back, running records for math. And it was pretty exciting to hear how they would be using that to really individualize students' instruction. We also continue to monitor the rollout of our science curriculum. As you know, we rolled it out in kindergarten and first grade last year. It has been phenomenal. The feedback kids have has been, we couldn't be happier. And the teachers are very excited about the work as well. The children entering kindergarten and first grade have some sophisticated ways of looking at the world around them, and they've really brought that to some of the work that we're doing during our workshops. Their experiences with the physical environment, the deeper exploration of core concepts, the engineering design challenges that they've been part of, visiting Stephanie Yeo's lab. The kids and I think the parents are very excited about what the children are talking about when they go home. So it's been a very, very exciting time for us in science. We're looking forward to third grade rolling it out. Third grade just attended Emily Kahn's workshop, and they came back super excited about the work that she's doing, and they want more of Emily Kahn. She's our consultant for science right now. So expand mindfulness practices in classes is our third bullet. We introduced mindfulness to our school 2 years ago, when I met with my student government and some different groups of children in fourth grade last year before they went to Matlin, I asked them what I could do to make the school a little bit better, what can I do to enhance, and they told me they would like me to bring back more structured mindfulness to the building. So 2 years ago, we had a consultant come in, and she works in all the classrooms. The first thing the new PTA president met with me and asked for was mindfulness to come back. So this year, we would like to continue working with students in the classrooms, but also provide parents with strategies so that they can help their kids outside of the school setting. So it can be with sports, it can be at home doing homework, it could be before going to bed. But the goal is really to have an 8-week program where kids leave knowing the strategies, owning the strategies, having coping skills, and really just replacing, I guess, the impulsive reactions that we see in all the kids with a more calming way to approach distractions and things that bother them, and to have more thoughtful responses. The fourth bullet is to grow student leadership opportunities. We started this about 4 years ago. We have our No Place for Hate ambassadors, student government that meets monthly with myself and the fourth grade teachers, two different meetings. We have our digital student newspaper, who recently reached out to Stony Brook, to a professor who's working on media literacy, digital literacy. And this year we're excited. We have a positive action group, which is working with our parents and our teachers. We're looking to create a PBIS system in the school that will help to support the responses of students, not in the classroom necessarily, but more the unstructured places, the school bus, the bathrooms, the hallways, and to ensure that everyone feels supported and we have appropriate responses at all times. And finally, I wrote down here our safety protocols and processes for building safety level teams, working with the POP officers, with Mr. Donnarumo's office. We actually had a scheduled lockdown drill today, and we canceled it and pushed it back because our POP officers who were supposed to attend couldn't attend. But we do have a very strong relationship with those POP officers for the last 4 years, and they've worked with us to make some changes to our drills, to change locations for fire dismissals. We used to go to 3 different parts of the building, and now they have us all meeting in one area. It really will help with the reunification process as we move forward in planning that. Nassau County Police comes about every 2 to 3 weeks, and they don't just stop in the office. They come to every single classroom. They talk with the kids. Just recently, last week, we had somebody who went into a fourth grade classroom and said, "What is this, a library? There's so many books. This is wonderful," trying to teach math in the hallways to kids. So it's a really strong relationship that we have with Nassau County. And with Homeland Security, we are continuing to really check off those audit bullets that they gave us so that we are ensuring everyone is safe, that we're following the guidelines of Nassau County. But it's been a very awakening I guess we'll call it at Old Beth Page, because we used to have our windows wide open and everybody come in and everyone in the hallways, and we're really starting to think differently about the safety and security of the kids and the staff in the building. So as we reflect, we're learning a lot about ourselves and about the building, what the building needs. Thank you.
Hi, thank you to the Board of Ed, to Central Administration, and my colleagues. As you speak, I write all those good ideas, so thank you so much. I started with the Next Generation Learning Standards. One of the things that we're trying to focus on is learning about the new standards that are coming, working with them, and then talking with each other about these standards. And one thing that I'd like to do, and I'm hoping to get it done by the time the year is end, is to work towards vertical articulation teams. Like Suzanne and Allison said, I've been listening to Allison when we have our meetings, and she's had much success with these vertical articulation teams, and it seems very doable. So thank you for leading the way with that. With that, the learning standards, we are focusing on literacy and mathematics. Literacy, we, with Mary's help, put together a SWOT team to take a look at how we can benchmark students in a more efficient way that would take up less instructional time, and we had success with that. And we also look at the benchmarks together as a team and decide what best services we can serve the children with. And that has actually been very successful from the get-go, which we were all surprised. But so we've had two conversations already about students and their benchmarks, one in the end of October and one at the end of November, just doing our best to serve the children. One thing that we also have been doing is really taking a look at responsive classroom. Pasadena has 10 teachers now who are trained in responsive classroom and are actively using it in their classrooms. Five of them are classroom teachers, and it happens that it's one on each grade. So when we do grade level meetings, a little bit of responsive classroom is tucked into each grade level meeting when they meet together. This year we had a responsive classroom consultant come and visit our school. She provided feedback, which I am going over with Jody Marchese on how to best deliver that information to the staff and how to move forward with responsive classroom through the rest of the year. We have started a journalism club. Last year it started with the third graders, and we have moved it to the fourth grade. The journalism club really came out of the ideas with going to the Nassau County Elementary School Principals Association, actually at Suzanne Gray's husband's school. They have a really active journalism club that I wanted to bring to our school, and children are doing stories that really affect Pasadena and are about Pasadena. So children are writing about the safety patrol, the all-star volleyball games that we have, the meditation, they're interviewing staff, and then they're using Google Slides to write these stories, and then eventually, hopefully soon, we're going to put them on the website so the community can see what the children think about the school and how they're interacting with the schools. One of the things that the children have been doing is talking about the safety patrol. And one story that's come out of the safety patrol is signage from the building. We didn't have signs telling people where to go in the building. And the Homeland Security said, you know, it'd be kind of nice if people kind of knew how to negotiate around the building based on signs. So that we decided that we were going to have our safety patrol create signs. They named each hallway. They went around and took surveys of what the children thought the names would be. And they're now pairing up with high school students to create wooden signs for parents that are up high and then kid signs, which are down low, that our safety patrol is creating. So that's really fun, and it really kind of speaks to what we need to do for Homeland Security and check up that audit list. One other thing that we're doing to help get parents in the building is something that the art teachers came up with to have a Pasadena Friends of the Arts. It's a group of volunteers from parents that come into our school and put up the artwork that the children make and then take down the artwork that the children make. And the parents get to be in the school. They get to volunteer. They get to spend time and then look at the beautiful artwork. So we're having a lot of fun at Pasadena. We're learning a lot. We're working hard. And we're working smart. So thank you very much.
Okay, good evening. So some of the things I'll be saying are really repeats of my colleagues.
Hello.
Are we good?
Hi.
All right.
She's going to sit on my lap.
Okay.
You're all good.
Okay. So we are continuing at Stratford Road with our K-4 vertical articulation teams. This is now our third year, and one of the goals was really to kind of beef up what that would look like for us, because I think the overarching theme is with faculty and staff is just increasing communication, collaboration, building the capacity of everybody in growing their own leadership. So with our K-4 vertical artic teams, we had one session so far, and that really began with the discussion of curriculum expectations and the continuum with our four academic chairs. So I was actually able to coordinate Maria Carnesi, Joyce Barry, Eileen Anino, and Jen Laguitata to come in on the same morning, sit with one, they each sat with one K-4 team, and they were able to just talk about the continuum within that academic area. They took fabulous notes, they came up with some plans, which really then our chairs can go back and think of the elementary curriculum piece as a whole, like with just us at Stratford serving as maybe helping to create some ideas for curriculum type of writing going forward. Some of the other goals we'll probably be working around will be on next generation standards in general, ELA and math in particular, really looking at formative assessments much more closely, digging a little bit more into looking at writing across those four or five grades, and also within our social emotional goals. We begin our year each year, and now I've been doing this for quite some time now, where every grade level and department gets together as you're really finalizing your board goals, we start to talk, because I know generally where they're going to fall. So I kind of lay out for the staff some main areas, and then they get into their grade level and departments. I give them a template similar to what we build our goal strategic plans around, and they begin developing those goals based on what you've developed and then what I foresee as those overarching ones. And so we spend a few sessions developing them and then reflecting on them throughout the year. So really, we try to, it helps to develop this cohesive sense of what's coming from the Board of Ed down to my work as the principal and then within the classrooms. And actually, this year I really worked on communicating that even more. So by all of those, I shared out with any other administrator that was involved in that group of teachers so that they could really see what their departments were working on. Next, into the math pilot. So I think overall it's always about looking at our math instruction and continuing that work that we've already set in place. But in thinking about our pilot teachers, really what is the balance that we know about solid instruction and keeping that in place as we're piloting these two math programs? So Jen Laguitata and I have been working closely around that and talking about the committee and just that pilot work and what that looks like this year. But again, with the focus and always talking about not necessarily the program, I can't remember who said this earlier, it's not really about the program, but it's about the standards and the things that we teach, and keeping that at the forefront. Oh, I'm like, what am I saying that's so funny? Okay. So I think, again, we're just keeping that at the forefront through cross-grade level discussions. I'm having them this month with K-1, 1-2. Again, just to keep it going, because it's not just the pilot teachers, but it's the non-pilot teachers. So they are gaining the familiar aspects of both programs, because we have to keep saying your grade in Stratford might only be working around Envisions 2.0, or your grade is Go Math, but you need to know as much as you can about the other programs. So that's the focus where I'm going over the next couple of months with trying to open up those conversations with my faculty so they feel better about all of the programs that we're looking at. And also fostering some classroom visits and trying to find a way to make that work. I didn't want to leave out on the plan also just the technology work, because we've, for years now, all of us spent a lot of time and effort onto the technology that we're building in, and I have that in my plan, but I also thought of all of the things I could put up here to just mention again tonight. It was not forgetting about the technology that we have, but really it is about how are we making it authentic and purposeful, as I put up on my bullet, and how does it enhance curriculum, student learning, teacher work, and the assessment process, and what can technology do to enhance all of that? So I didn't want to forget about that. Next is looking at really student leadership, and we've all mentioned that in some way. I'm pleased to be able to attend the Leader in Me workshops that we're having later this week, even though the focus will be on middle schools, but just to increase my understanding, because the goals, and I had this conversation earlier this year with Alice and Joe, is about how can we increase and emphasize the student leadership that we do have in place already. And so within our social-emotional goals around No Place for Hate and our PBIS program, this is now our second year, with having a fabulous PBIS program in place, I'm saying to those teams, how can you enhance student leadership and bring more student voice into that? So one example is in our No Place for Hate, one of the goals will be for the student ambassadors to read books and facilitate conversations in every classroom. So we're really excited. I was just recently, Lynn and I were sharing that with Dr. Lewis. And then also with our PBIS system, really having teachers are now, and again, these are ideas coming from the teams. We have shout-outs that are taking place, so little post-its are being put on the wall in the main office now. We want staff to recognize, and we are thinking about now, how do we move this into those places that are harder, the bus, in the gymnasium during dismissal time, and how can we bring those aspects that we have in our SOAR program into those locations. And then finally, again, I don't have to say any more about the way that we're emphasizing our safety procedures. And really, I think just the emphasis in talking a lot to Mr. Donnarumma is around our emergency response teams and having them even more involved in the process, the procedures that are taking place, and the decision making. So that's really our emphasis.
Any questions? I just want to say thank you. I mean, this is really not only enlightening, but wow, you've really done a tremendous amount. We thank you. And I think the whole social emotional piece just makes it such a better place to be at. Thank you, guys. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. No questions.
Wow, good.
All right.
Okay. We're going to have the senior exit and postgraduate survey.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Bring a flashlight.
Is your mic on?
Okay, I think it's on. There you go. Good evening again. I will be reviewing the results of the most recent senior exit survey and our most recent postgraduate survey. Quickly some background. Our district first contracted with LifeTrack Services back in 2015. We actually contracted in 2014, but it was starting with the class of 2015. Each year, we administer the senior exit survey in June through either our senior English or social studies classes. The counselors administer that survey. And in addition to the senior exit survey, a postgraduate survey is sent to alumni 18 months after they graduate. And a five-year survey will be sent to each class as well. You all have a copy of the PowerPoint. These are the 16 questions that are asked on the senior exit survey. We ask questions how students feel about their high school experience, both in and out of the classroom. So we will go through those. Starting with the first question, just asking them what they plan to pursue. 95% of the students responded that they would attend a four-year college. The actual number was closer to 88%. Just want to make sure that we're up. Okay. Here, graduating seniors felt very positive about the support from their counselors as well as elective offerings. We saw slight increases in both of these questions from the year before, which I noted at the bottom. So I know this is sort of small to see. I tried to, in yellow, highlight the numbers just a little larger. Okay, moving ahead. These are questions about how they felt about extracurriculars. About 80% of the seniors felt that their extracurriculars helped prepare them for their future, and about 90% of the students reported that they felt that the administration helped to make JFK a safe space, which was nice. Okay. Here, these next two slides, we asked about research-based writing opportunities. We saw an increase in the positive responses. Over 90% of the students also felt that their teachers held high expectations and offered support. Okay. Next slide. We asked about how the students felt about real-life relevancy in their learning. We did see increases here as well. Looking at the positive responses, about 72% rated their preparation for their transition after high school as either excellent or good. Both of these, again, were increases from the year before. In terms of learning about the dangers of drug and alcohol use, the excellent and good responses increased to 84%. I just bunched the excellent and good responses together for reporting purposes. That, again, increased to from 80.89% to about 84%, which was a nice increase. Also, feeling that they were academically challenged, the excellent good responses actually decreased not so slightly, 82% to 78%, which I found really interesting because, especially with this last graduating class, we had such a high AP participation rate and such a high number of AP scholars, so I thought that was an interesting response. We asked if they felt their teachers provided them with frequent feedback regarding their academic performance. About two-thirds of the seniors gave an excellent or good rating on that. And we also saw a nice increase regarding how they felt about their preparation for college entrance exams. That jumped from 58% to over 65% with favorable ratings. In asking them to evaluate their preparation and the use of technology, there were increases in this area and also in the area of how they felt about their overall preparation for their post-secondary plans, college work and career. That increased slightly as well. And then we ask, how proud are you about having graduated from POB-JFK? And this was a slight decrease, actually, from 86% to about 83%. So overall, lots of increases, but that last question, a slight decrease, a little bit disappointing. Moving on to the alumni survey. So this is sent to the class of 2016. And again, listing the questions that we asked 18 months after they graduated. We had a total number of respondents, 221, which is about a 60% response rate, which really was not bad at all. About 80%. I'm sorry?
How many kids were in the class?
About 350.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, very good. So about 80% responded that they were attending a four-year college. The numbers are, you have to remember that they can mark all that apply. So when you're seeing the numbers of the students working part-time, I'm sure that some of those students are also going attending college. So just keep that in mind. This first question, we had reframed some of the questions, so I pointed that out on the slides. This was one of them that we reframed. About two-thirds of the respondents were positive about the impact of their high school elective courses. We asked specifically about how they may have impacted their exploration of different career opportunities. Moving ahead, asking if they had felt safe, accepted, and supported for who they were and what their interests were. About 77% of the students report feeling safe and accepted. We asked about their preparation in terms of thinking skills, such as creativity, decision-making, and problem-solving. About 68% were positive, again, excellent or good in that area. We also reframed some questions from the prior year about their writing preparation. When we reviewed this as a cabinet, we agreed that we wanted more specific information or more specific feedback, I should say. Still pretty consistent from the way that we had first framed it. 60 to 62% of the students answering favorably about writing a personal narrative essay and writing a research-based argument essay. We split that up into two separate questions. We also asked about how they felt about their preparation in specific content areas. So in their preparation in mathematics, about 70% were reported favorable responses. In English, about 73%. I had positive responses, favorable, I should say. In the area of science, 69, almost 70% were favorable, again, excellent or good. In history, there's actually a typo. It was a very slight decrease from 74.77 to 74.66, that should say. So very stable, around 75%, which was incredibly high. Okay. Sorry. Okay, in terms of technology preparation, we asked about how they felt if they were exposed to various innovations in robotics, engineering, media, and/or computer tech. Again, we reframed this from the year before because we felt that the question was too broad the year before. And we also asked how well did high school prepare you to work in a digital environment, both in your post-secondary education experience and in the real world. So generally speaking, in terms of technology preparation, they reported between a 45 to 50% favorable ratings. We asked about how they felt if they were socially prepared, drug and alcohol awareness, sex education, online safety, character building. In this area, about 72% of the students rated excellent or good. And we saw an increase in favorable ratings regarding how well the rigor of their high school program prepared them for college. That was a nice jump from 62% to over 68% from the prior year. And then the final question was, how well did the guidance department help you in your transition to where you are today? About two-thirds of the respondents felt that they were helpful, again, with that excellent or good rating. Any questions?
Hi. Thank you for putting this together.
Sure.
It's an interesting course section. Of the 2018, how many were the responses? Was that the whole class? Was it all?
Yes, with very, very few students.
Not taking.
Yeah.
Now, what are the plans from some of these responses? Some of these are not as favorable as we should, I think, as the district who is sending 95% of our students to a higher education. Mm-hmm. What are the plans from from the responses that we've gotten?
Yeah, so what we do each year, we obviously share this with Mr. Murray, and he and I present this at our high school principal cabinet, discuss it with the chairs and directors who are asked to go back to their departments, kind of reflect on that, and come up with plans moving ahead. I can speak to guidance in terms of, you know, one of the frustrations that we've had in terms of where students feel their help from guidance in their post-secondary planning. And so, you know, we've worked over the past several years putting together what I think is just a fabulous College 101 program, but the students that we don't get a great turnout. So we've talked a lot about different ways that we can increase that. We started, I'm going to mess this up. We came up with a certificate that students can earn if they attend a certain number of our College 101 workshops. That seems to have boosted our enrollment. So this year, the workshops that we've run this fall so far, we've had standing room only, and I don't know that I can honestly point to that one change, but I think we're working harder to try to get the word out that these are important and they're helpful and all of that kind of thing. So I think each department takes their own kind of approach, and in terms of the department supervisors talking to their teachers through their department meetings to focus in on some of these responses. But I agree, we like to see those percentages higher.
Debbie? Yeah. Oh. I was going to ask Lorna if it could be shared with us once these plans were put in place.
What?
Oh, thank you. I am like...
Who's speaking?
Thank you. Is there a place in the survey or surveys for students to comment on some of the questions? Because I'd love to know the students who weren't proud to come from our high school. Like, I would like to hear why they weren't, and maybe some of those things could be addressed.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no, you have to follow a certain format, so you can do ratings questions, you can do yes-no questions, there's no open-ended questions the way that the company does that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
That's very interesting.
Thank you.
No, that was kind of funny.
To turn them back down again.
This is an evening of a lot of reports. We're going to have a demographic study. Yes, we're right on time.
So when we were looking at the kindergarten center and making some recommendations, we used the data from Western Suffolk BOCES and their latest data on the demography. As we look to the two middle schools, we were looking at our challenges, and again, we went back to Western Suffolk BOCES to update us on the situation that's before us in terms of our demographics. So we welcome you from Western Suffolk BOCES. Rich was the one who actually did it, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Sure. This is Barbara Graziano, demographer from Western Suffolk BOCES. I have to say this is the first time we've met in person, but yeah, we spoke on the phone so many times.
Yes.
As soon as you walked in, I felt like I knew you. So anyway, a lot of information in this presentation. Hopefully we'll try and condense things a bit. I know one of the board's main questions is why and how, what's the driver behind our enrollment growth and what do we expect going into the future? In part, and we talked at length about the Country Point development and how that is impacting enrollment in Plainview. With that, I pass it off to you.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for having me. Well, I'll jump right into this. I'll start off by just giving you a quick background about the Office of School Planning and Research at Western Suffolk BOCES. We have been generating long-range planning studies since 1985. During that time, more than 1,000 studies have been completed for districts, not just on Long Island, but also in Westchester, Orange, Rockland, and other counties north of the city. Some Nassau County districts that we currently work with include Jericho, Garden City, Lynbrook, and a few others, as noted on the slide. What is involved in a study? Well, we research a lot of demographics in the district, and that includes births. We look at national birth trends as well as county birth trends, all the way down to birth trends within the school district itself. We also research housing trends and look at the housing trend in housing turnovers within the district, also look at the median sale price within the district. We also contact the local municipalities to find out about any new housing projects that may be in the works. We also research population trends, and that would include not just whether the population is growing or not, but also the age structure to see whether there are any age changes to the age structure within the district, as well as any changes to the ethnic structure, and so forth. We also look at non-public school enrollment, because obviously changes there can have an impact on district enrollment. Then we analyze district enrollment trends. We look at trends over the past 10 years, and that would include migration trends from grade to grade. In other words, does the district tend to gain students, lose students, or just maintain students as a cohort moves from a grade in 1 year to the following grade in the next year? And then from those trends, we develop ratios that we use to then issue grade level projections. The last one on there, the birth persistence analysis. This is where we look at the correlation or the relationship between kindergarten enrollment in a given year and the number of births 5 years prior. And from that, we develop kindergarten birth ratios that then we use to develop kindergarten projections. These are some of the research sources that we use. We get a lot of our data from the Census Bureau. We also get data from the New York State Department of Education, the New York State Department of Health. That's where we get our birth data from. New York Office of Real Property Services, as well as others as noted on the slide. I'm often asked about the accuracy of our projections. Overall, enrollment projections issued by Western Suffolk BOCES fall within a 4% margin of error. However, there are several categories of projections, and those would include, first, projections based on students already enrolled in the system are the most reliable. The next category would be projections based on documented births, and these are slightly less reliable. And then after that, the next category is projections based on estimates of future births, and those are the least reliable. Naturally, the most reliable projections are those calculated for the periods closest in time. Naturally, as each year goes by, trends change, things happen, so therefore, as I said, with each year that goes by, the projections become a little less reliable each year. First, we'll look at the demographics within the school district. This shows the resident population, which has grown by 1.9% between 2000 and 2010, and then increased by an additional 2.4%, or approximately 700 people, between 2010 and 2017. This shows you the changes to the age structure within the district over a period beginning in 1990 through 2016. And as you can see, during that time, the under the preschool or the under age 5 segment of the resident population has decreased. The school age population has remained relatively stable. However, the young adult population, the ages 20 to 39, has been decreasing. The 40 to 64 segment has grown, and there's been a significant increase in the 65 and older segment of the population, which is, these are trends that, same trends that we're seeing in most every district that we work with. The resident ethnic population has, there have not been dramatic changes here as we've seen in many districts, although the white population has decreased from approximately 92% in 2000 to about 80% in 2016, while there has been slight growth in the Hispanic segment and growth also in the Asian segment. This slide shows you Nassau and Suffolk County births for the 20-year period, 1996 through 2016. And as you can see, births in both counties have been decreasing. It's about 22% in Suffolk and about 19% in Nassau County. And there does not appear to be any change in this trend. Young women, the millennials, just are not having as many babies as they used to for a variety of reasons, which includes high levels of student loan debt, women who are focusing on careers, as well as just a general sociological shift to where that age, those millennials just are not in a big hurry. Does not seem to be as important to them to graduate from college or graduate from school, get married, and have kids right away. So many demographers thought that after the recession that this trend would, trend upward again, and that has not happened. This shows you births within the Plainview Old Bethpage School District. There has been a drop-off in births here as well, although not as dramatic as we've seen in a number of districts. However, as you can see, from 2003 through 2009, in most years, births were above 270. However, beginning in 2010, births dropped down, and in most years were below 250.
Yeah. People are moving in.
This shows you housing sales, housing turnover within the district for the period 2005 through 2017. As you can see, housing turnover dropped to a low of 205 sales in 2010 and then has been trending upward since then. In 2017, there were 439 sales recorded within the district. Along with that, the median sale price dropped down to $445,000 in 2011. But again, as in the housing turnover, sales have been the median price has been trending upward. In last year in 2017, the median sale price was $550,000. And this is a trend that we're seeing in a number of districts, more so in Nassau County, not as much in Suffolk County. But in well-regarded districts, it seems that there has been activity with younger families moving in, and in some cases, apparently, those millennials are starting to think about having settling down and having babies. So, like I said, in a number of Nassau County districts and lower Westchester, we're seeing similar trends. New housing within the district, I'm sure you all know about Country Point. There are 660 luxury units planned for this development. They are mostly age-restricted units. There are also 90 additional units administered by the Town of Oyster Bay Senior Housing Authority on the same property, but just outside the main entrance. The development is fully approved and currently under construction. According to the Town of Oyster Bay, as of late August, approximately 56 units had received certificates of occupancy. There has been some discussion of, even though this development, because most of it is age-restricted, is not expected to yield a significant number of students. However, there has been discussion that a number of people moving into that development, seniors who are looking to downsize, are selling their homes, and younger families are buying those homes. So, therefore, there could be a student influx from those, that kind of what we call trickle-down effect. Unfortunately, there are really no statistics that indicate what kind of impact a district would get from that trickle down. Next, we'll look at enrollment. During the 10-year historical period, enrollment peaked in 2009 with almost 5,100 students. Subsequently, enrollment dropped down to a low in 2013, and for the most part has been increasing since then. Overall, during that 10-year period, there was a loss of 143 students, or 2.8%. We're projecting a gain of 140 students, or 2.8%, so that by 2023, enrollment is projected to return to the level that the district saw in 2009. This slide shows you the correlation between kindergarten enrollment and births 5 years prior. The top line, the purple line, is enrollment, kindergarten enrollment. The bottom line is school district births 5 years prior. As you can see, there's generally the kindergarten enrollment in most cases follows the trend of the births. However, in recent years, there has been an increase in the kindergarten birth ratio. In other words, there are more children moving into the district after birth than the district has seen in previous years. Mm-hmm. So although there has been somewhat of a drop-off in the number of births, kindergarten enrollment is not expected to dip as much because of these increases in the kindergarten birth ratios, which is not surprising, and that reflects the increase in housing sales within the district. This shows you the actual students gained or lost by grade configuration. As I mentioned before, over the 10-year period, there was a loss of 143 students. 63 of those students were lost in the elementary configuration. Middle grades remained pretty relatively stable, and the high school grades lost 72 students. Moving forward over the next 5 years, the kindergarten, elementary configuration is expected to remain stable with a gain of 7 students. A gain of 63 students is expected in the middle grades and 70 students in the high school grades. This shows you the projected elementary sectional needs for the next 5 years. In 2018, in the current school year, the district houses 90 instructional sections. And over the next 5 years, projections indicate that the district will need between 88 and 92 sections. And then the last column shows you average class sizes per school, ranging from 21.1 students in Old Bethpage to 23.1 students in Pasadena. So enrollment will be impacted by several factors. One is that on average, the district gains students in transition to most grades. And again, that's consistent with the increase in housing sales within the district. However, as smaller kindergarten classes will replace larger graduating 12th grade classes each year, because as the district picks up students in grade-to-grade migrations, by the time that kindergarten cohort reaches 12th grade, that cohort now has become a fairly larger cohort. So then it's replaced, though, the following year by a smaller kindergarten class coming in. So that's why smaller kindergarten classes will replace larger graduating 12th grade classes with losses of between 17 to 83 students expected each year. However, those losses will be minimized by the gains through migration. Births have declined. However, kindergarten birth ratios have increased. Average kindergarten cohorts for the period 2013 to 2018 were 337. We're projecting for 2018 through 2023, the average will be 343 students in kindergarten. And just to summarize, total district enrollment is projected to grow to a projection period peak of 5,085 students in 2023. This is a gain of 140 students when compared to the current enrollment. During the next 5 years, the elementary grades are expected to remain stable, while gains of 63 and 70 students are projected in the middle and high school grades, respectively.
Thank you. Comments, questions? Susan?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to use some of your data to ask the district a question.
Sure.
So based on your summary on this last page where we had the same amount of students in 2009 as we will projected for 2019, is it possible to get a report how we broke down the 2009 class between the elementary school? Pasadena was open at that point? 2009?
It was.
Is it?
The actual, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The actual demographic report, the long one, has a breakdown.
Yeah, it does.
By each building, by grade, by year, going back from 2008.
Where is that?
The actual study.
Where is it?
In the packet.
The actual study is being printed at this moment, so.
Okay, so I missed that then. Okay, I'm sorry.
But there was one 2 years ago.
It's a draft.
Maybe that's the one.
Well, that's what I was, I wanted to know what happened, provision for those goals prior to.
Well, you'll be getting that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll find it in the packet.
Yeah. I just wanted to confirm something that I think
it's in the packet.
You said.
Okay.
This analysis does not include any estimate for the trickle-down effect.
I'm glad you asked that question because I did not point that out, which I should have. Because of that trickle-down effect, which, like as I mentioned, there's really no historical data for us to tap into on that. However, based on that and also based on the fact that housing in the district is on the uptrend. We did use higher than average migration ratios for the primary grades for the next 2 years. We felt that, you know, we needed to include that in the projections based on the housing trends and based on the possible trickle-down effect.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments?
Seth?
I have just a follow-up question to that, sure. And then just a general, I guess, comment in light of recent conversations that we've had. The question is, so if you used higher than average migration ratios for the next 2 years, that's then built in for subsequent years too, right? I mean, just because...
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Well, then after 2 years, then we used a lower migration ratio, but those higher student numbers, as they move through the system, will still be there. If that.
Yep.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
And then I guess once we get the final report, as opposed to
the draft
report that I understand is broken down by the schools.
It is.
I don't think that. My guess is that's not going to change, even though in the conclusion there's an increase of about 140 students over the next 4 years. When you look at that report, which one finalized, it'll show that there's a significant increase when we talk about the middle school level. You show the increase is at 2023, 2024. I'm sorry, 2024, 2025 at POB Middle School. We're talking about the enrollment challenge there. From actual this year is 837. Next year is about 21 students higher, which is slightly lower than I think initially expected. But that trend, it slightly drops, but then it balloons in 2024 for almost about another 50. And in 2025, it's at 902. So really the focus of 2023, 2024, 2025, and the conversations that we're having in terms of, you know, putting out a survey recently asking K-1 and 2, the K-1 and 2 students, if you're in K now in 2018, you're in fifth grade in 2023, 2024. And the first graders in sixth. So you're part of that. So I think it was important to have put out there. And, you know, when that, you know, I think it's important to show that there is, a higher appetite than of the K-1 and 2, of parents of K-1 and 2 students than there was of the 3 and 4 parents. And I think that all helps. That should inform us as we continue our conversation and as we continue to discuss the options in terms of how to address the enrollment challenge. So that part was really not for you.
It was for us.
But I mean, I think the timing is great that we have it. I think the information is useful and will inform us going forward. You know, I think it along with that survey results will help inform us, I think, a little bit further as we continue our conversation. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. You're very welcome. Any other questions?
We're done.
You should have the actual reports by the end of the week.
Okay, thank you.
Being put together this afternoon as I left. So.
Did you see it?
Now we're going to go to security updates. I see a door with a handle.
Again, this is what you were asking.
But that's not by building. That's by grade. I have to read it.
Yeah.
Read the report.
She knows where it is now.
I now know where it is.
I sent it to you.
Yeah.
No. You see that, right?
It to you again. It's in your email.
Okay, good evening, everyone. End of last year, we definitely took an opportunity to talk as a district about the safety and security enhancements that are going to be put into place this year and in subsequent years. It's nice to see the principals come to the table and put in their strategic plans, all notes with a focus on that. So I thank them sincerely for their efforts and really all the stuff that we're going to talk about today. So what I want to do in the next 10 minutes or so is I really do want to take a look at the following areas to talk about really the focus that we had on upgrading our camera system, the focus that we had in putting additional resources in place on nights and weekends through district patrol, a system called the one-button lockdown system that we've implemented in all seven buildings this past month, a scholarship smart ID system that's been implemented and talked about tonight briefly as well at the high school. And then programs that are going to be coming in the near future to Plainview Old Beth Page. The first is Sandy Hook, a Say Something program, which is really going to encourage people to speak out if they have concerns regarding safety and security. The classroom door lock project, which I have a visual really on the lock that we've zoned in on, and I'm going to be doing a pilot in the near future. Just to give you a brief update on entry vestibules, window film, and then a focus that is going to be the later half of this year, which is reunification at the elementary level. So as we took a look at the first part of safety and security updates with our systems, one of the things that came to the forefront is really the need to upgrade our camera system. We had cameras in our buildings. We had cameras in the interior, exterior, but they were aging. They were analog cameras that were blurry. They were really at their end of their shelf life. So we really took a focus in our bond project to really upgrade them, replace the current, and to also build out our current system. So those projects are all complete. When we talk about bond work with camera systems, exterior, interior cameras have been upgraded all the buildings. In addition, the recording devices, the DVRs that they record back to, have been replaced, and there have been additional storage devices added. When we took a look at this system, we also built out the access. In years past, it used to be that just certain positions within a building would have access to our camera systems. We've built that out to the greeter stations, to the security guards, to the administrators having second screens on their desks, if you see, with monitors and being able to see what's going on in their buildings actively, et cetera. We've taken that, and in addition, we've also built out what we call e-maps for each one of our buildings that I'm going to show you in a second. And the e-maps really are a good focus to organize, since we have so much going on within our buildings, how to manage all of those resources, whether it's cameras, whether it's classroom pictures, et cetera, fire extinguishers, all the assets that help out within our buildings. So I'm going to actually show you briefly, if I could, what I'm actually talking about. So if you look up on the screen there, there are cameras, they're duplicate cameras that are up of the high school lobby. The ones that are on the right side, the ones that are flickering, those are analog cameras that are at their end of their shelf life. So if we were to click on this camera, we could see what's going on in the high school lobby right now, but you could see it's grainy. The image is a little blurred out. Whereas now, if we were to shift over and look at the same image in a different direction in the high school lobby, you could see crystal clear with our IP cameras what's happening. So that's the difference at which you talk about our camera systems have been upgraded. And we have the ability through our systems to zoom in, to really hone in on what's actually happening. So when I talk about that, I want you to understand it's not just swapping out a camera and getting the same result. You're really seeing a significant improvement. Now, the next thing that I want to take a look at with you is something that got talked about last year through Nassau County Police. They talked about an ADOS system with the Rave app to be able to populate camera systems and door access systems within a particular building. So what you have in front of you right now is it's called an e-map for our building, which is JFK. It's of the first floor. And what we try to do is we try to organize this. In case of an emergency with Nassau County, they can tap into our camera system and see things. They're not going to know our building in and out. We know our building's in and out, but this is going to help them to guide them. So what is really represented on this map? It's all the cameras with live view. So if we ever have to respond to an incident in a particular hallway, you can actually follow through the hallway and be able to accurately represent where someone's potentially going or what you want to look at. You have cameras. You also have locations of fire extinguishers, etc. What I'm most impressed about with this system is that we've also taken the opportunity to say that we know that cameras are not in instructional spaces, but it's important to know what a particular room looks like in case of an emergency. If there was ever a particular emergency where police had to respond, what does it look like in there? What environment are they going into? So what we did in every one of our building is we have built out what we have is static pictures, picture of the high school library, and then what we have at every space too is a panoramic picture where if we had to respond to an emergency, the police, emergency responders could look at what the potential of that space looks like. Is there a stairwell? Are there different doorways? And that is represented in every one of our rooms and every one of our buildings. So that's when I talk about those features. It's not just about swapping out cameras. it really has made a significant difference on monitoring. So the next thing that was voted on in the budget is you as a board, elected to provide additional resources for district patrols. So in years past, we had one particular person or a shared position that would roam the district to cover our seven schools plus the two buildings that are owned. Now what we have is what I showed you as far as resources in the room that's actually right to the backside of Rennell. In that room right there, that is our temporary command center where we have a security guard that uses those systems, those camera systems, to then work with the guard that's in the car to talk over handheld radios, to guide what's happening as far as going around and providing patrol. So it's more in an educated fashion. We're responding to things that we see rather than trying to go in circles and really gather what they see from their visits. So the district patrol, they're using our systems that we have. The handheld radios we talked about in the past, they're using those systems. The camera systems, the EMAPs, and they're doing the building checks, the property patrol, and they're providing, most importantly, the evening and the weekend coverage that is needed. One of the systems that I'm most proud of working with the building administration to bring to POB and our security company we work with is something called the one-button lockdown system. In the event of an emergency, there are so many features, there's so many things simultaneously would have to happen inside of a building to accurately pull off a lockdown. You'd have to communicate with the Nassau County Police. Someone would have to physically do that, whether it's the Rave app or picking up 911 and talking to them. Someone's going to have to physically go to the PA system and talk to the staff and students to alert them as to what the emergency is and what the procedures they would follow. We'd also have to worry about those that are off out of the building, off campus. We have to worry about those systems as well. And then we also have our staff access systems that are allowing people to come or go within our building. This system, which is pictured right on the lower left-hand corner, they look very similar to fire pole stations. They're blue in color. They have a red push button in the middle. With the push of that one button, four distinct features happen automatically within the system. One, it calls out through central monitoring to Nassau County Police to alert them of an emergency that requires a lockdown. It automatically also takes the pre-recorded message from the principal that has been recorded in the past and plays it via the PA system automatically. You don't have to go to a PA to make an announcement to your staff and students. It also activates what we call our blue lockdown strobes. They're featured in the center of the screen here. Those are strategically placed on the outside of the building and in areas within the building such as cafeterias, auditoriums, areas where you potentially don't hear the message that is played via a PA system, gyms, etc. Any question?
How many would be in a room? Let's take a gym.
Take a gym. So it depends on, actually, it depends on the space. So if you were dividing, you had the potential to divide out a gym space with walls, that's taken into account. So it could be that there are four in a gym. It could be if there's only two sides, it could be two in a gym. It really depends on how it could be divided up. Yeah.
I have a question about the strobes.
Sure.
You know what I'm going to ask?
Probably.
Through the years, we've been told that strobe lights could exacerbate certain conditions or issues children are dealing with. Mm-hmm. So what happens in a case like that?
Yeah, so I've been assured through our security company that these strobes, the way that they pulse at, the way that they register, will not trigger any of that concern. That was one of my concerns as well. It's been researched. So I'm hoping that they're true in that promise, to be honest, but that was one of the things that we considered and questioned them on for sure. Yeah, no problem at all. And the most important feature that the system does is it disables staff access to the building. We don't want people walking into our buildings in the event of a lockdown. Shouldn't be granted access. That, with the push of a button, does all four of those features. One of the most important things is obviously we're going to test this system every time that we do a lockdown. So from here on out, this is the system we use to initiate a lockdown drill within our buildings. Go ahead.
So did you test it through the button push or through the app, both? Like,
yep.
Piggyback on that.
Sure.
How many of these, but the lights you were talking about, how many, it was with the partition depending on the size.
Yeah.
How many of these buttons would be in a school building? Obviously,
sure.
Depending on size, but is it like feet, like a fire drill?
So let me first talk about the activation of it. So the activation, so it's important that you point out this down here. So this icon right here is talking about the Rave Panic app that's being deployed in Suffolk County schools as well right now. This is a different system than the system that I talk about with One Button Lockdown, but it's important. So these systems are separate. The communication that you're going to have to Nassau County Police is going to be as quick as possible through the Rave app. For sure, it's direct to the 911 call center, direct to a police officer that sits at a terminal. This system calls the central monitoring, so it calls out to call to them. When we initiate this in a drill, it's just like a fire system right now. So we contact central monitoring beforehand, we provide a code, we take the system offline, we hit the button, it does everything it's supposed to do, and then when we need to, we disable the button by re-engaging it out. We then go into a computer software to re-engage the system. So we take it offline and we're able to practice with that system. In the event of emergency, all you have to do is go and hit the button. As far as the lights, the panic stations, what we started out was with a minimum of 4 stations per building. You will see in my budget, that is one of the main focuses that I'm going to have, is to build that system out so that there's equal access to all staff within the building for access to this system, because I think it's very, very important. So really what we're talking about these being right now are the principal's office, the main office, the greeter station, custodial office, and in buildings like this where it's so unique, there are other places that we've deployed it.
So something you just said, and then maybe now I'm a little confused. Lockdown One Step is different than Rave?
Yep, so they're completely two different systems. So our lockdown system in our building calls Nassau County, but it also takes into account the notification necessary within our buildings to our staff and our students. So our one button contacts police, contacts or communicates with staff and students. The lockdown strobes are activated, and it disables access to the building. The Rave Panic app was designed to only communicate with the police and provide them with the resources necessary to respond to the emergency. So two separate. Ideally, what we want to do in a real emergency, hit the button and hit the button, both systems.
Now, Newsday just ran an article. It's no cost to us.
Correct.
But I think Suffolk County's now getting a pushback because they have like a $2 million budget gap or something like that, because it's like $25,000 per district per year.
Yeah, I'm not certain on the Suffolk County side of things. It was free to us, and it still remains
free
to us.
Okay.
Correct.
Great.
Yeah, I haven't heard any chatter of there being a charge for it.
Okay.
In a situation where we do have a lockdown or a lockout,
mm-hmm.
Clearly students will be texting their parents mm-hmm. and telling them about it. Do we have a way in our plan of notifying parents?
Yeah, one of the focuses that we had at the end of last year was to do just that. So we have generic, scaled out responses for text, phone messages, emails, for every type of emergency that we could think of potentially out there. And in cases where we needed to enact that, we would also deploy those systems as well. Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As we move on, the next system that this recently was implemented, Mr. Murray had talked briefly about this earlier, is a scholarship system. So we do have scholarship already in our buildings. It's at the buildings to monitor visitor management. We've built this out to handle assisting with off-campus privileges. So what we really have is we have an ID system that has been issued to all students in grades through 12. The IDs and the lanyards are color-coded by grade level. In essence, what happens on the student side of things is if you have the privileges to leave campus, and even if you don't, this system will take care of that. Basically, systems go to the machine, which is located in the main lobby of the high school. They, what we call, tap their card against the machine, and it does the following. It checks against student information that is stored in campus, and it is as follows. It checks to make sure that students are in grades 11th and 12th, because that's our policy on off-campus. It checks to make sure that parent permission has been granted and entered into Infinite Campus. That's the next step. And it checks, most importantly, to ensure that the student is in a free or lunch period during that time they're trying to leave the building. Based on those criteria, you know, taking into effect, it's either they're allowed to leave or not allowed to leave. What I want to do now is I want to focus from the response part, because a lot of what I talk about, so safety and security, has to do with in the event of an emergency. This feature that I'm going to talk about, and I'll just let the video speak for itself, will help us to respond to things like this potentially.
I'm here at the scene of tomorrow's shooting, where a 15-year-old
will kill... Let me just pause it for a second and see if... Could you...
Turn it down so
Okay. Gotcha. Let me. Got it. I could take care of it here, Vince.
I'm here at the scene of tomorrow's shooting, where a 15-year-old will kill four children, two adults, and then turn the gun on himself.
When the shooting starts happening tomorrow, first I'll probably just think it's firecrackers or a car backfiring or something.
He told some of us that his dad kept a gun in his closet, and he always talked about using it on, you know, the people that bullied him. Tomorrow I'll probably say that I wish I told someone.
You know, after the shooting, we're going to feel pretty bad about picking on him, but until then, we'll probably just keep doing it because he's pretty weird.
Tomorrow I'll probably point out that something has seemed off with him since the beginning of the school year.
And I'm now joined by the officers who will be the first responders tomorrow. What additional details can you share with us?
Well, someone is expected to tell us after the shooting that the shooter has been posting on social media about doing this for weeks.
So how will you explain the shooting to your daughter?
Actually, I won't get to explain it to her because she won't make it.
This is Christine Lynn, reporting from the scene of another shooting. We'll say we never saw coming.
Yeah, so definitely Sandy Hook does a really good job on creating PSAs to get attention. There are many of them out there. That one is really, when I first saw it, I couldn't even believe that they came up with that idea. But it's really important to go back to the root of their focus. So Sandy Hook is a non-for-profit organization that their focus and their goal is to help school districts like ours get programs into their schools to make a difference. That's really their focus. They're all free of charge. They're all volunteers. They all provide not only a product, but the training and support to go behind those products. So what I'm looking at bringing to the district that we had talked about in the past is something called a Say Something program. And really what it does is it takes a product which is not sophisticated in the thought behind it, but it basically creates three platforms to make reports. It provides an app to make a report of concern. It provides a number to make a report of concern. And it provides a website to make a report of concern. And with the Sandy Hook Say Something program app does is it divides it into two categories, whether that report that is inappropriate is life safety or non-life safety. If it's life safety, the crisis counselors that are on 24/7, 365 days a year take that report and triage it. They try to engage that person in a conversation to get additional information from them. They try to maintain that communication while Nassau County Police, as well as the district, has the ability to monitor what's being said on both sides so we can actually see the conversation. It is important that this is available 24/7, what's also important is if it's something of life safety, it's going to be automatically communicated to Nassau County Police. One of the criteria, there's two criteria that the program wants from the school district. They want a 3-year commitment that they're here to stay, that they're going to be sustained in our schools. But even to start a conversation with them, you have to bring Nassau County Police or your local police department to the table in the initial meeting. So I have the support of Nassau County Police Department. They're getting training now on that system to respond. Once that's in place, then our students would be trained and we'd be able to take this program live. But it's important. It's a good way for us to get ahead of potential problems, and it's not all about potential active shooter. It could be anything that is of concern for life safety or non-life safety. So we're looking at anticipated realistic launch date for that is reality is going to be even moved up from there. Just from the information I've gotten in the past day or so, it's probably going to be a mid-January when we'd be able to launch that program. Now to things that we've talked about in the past. So we've talked about some of the difficulties that we've seen during the lockdown drills with using keys and locking doors on our staff side. So what I have to my left here is something called a Salto XS4 door lock. We've taken many months to go through various door lock products, and we are confident that this choice that we're going to pilot at Old Beth Page actually this month we're going to be looking to install is the product that we really feel that confidently is going to help us out. So really what this door lock does is it's just like, you know, checking into a hotel. When you go to a hotel, you're granted a card. That card provides access to a room. It's very similar in that sense. What's nice about this system is I always get asked when I sit at this table, what happens when the electric goes out? the important part is this door lock actually deals with that. All the access that's granted is stored on the card. So when the electric goes out, we can initiate a lockdown from the backside of this lock with our card still. It'll still initiate a lockdown and lock that door in a manual process. The door will operate 3 years on the batteries that are stored within that door lock. The nice part about this is that no longer will you need a hard key to go and check into a building. Your staff ID card that'll get you into the outside of the building will get you into your classroom as well. In the event of an emergency where we need to lock our classroom doors, that one-button lockdown system that I talked about, this would be our fifth element locked into that button. So when we hit that button, our door locks within our schools could also automatically be locked within the time segment that we designate. That's definitely extremely important. The nice part about this as well is it's programmed just like anything else that's computerized these days. At 7:30, if we want our doors to all be opened for staff and for subs, we can set it, and every single one of the door locks within the building will click, 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 open up. And at a set time, if we want our doors to lock at a certain time in the evening, we can do that as well. Yeah.
What happens in case of a glitch and the system goes down?
As far as just not. Yep. So there are features to be able to disable the card system. Everything's online and programmed. Plus, there's cards that are programmed to override certain things that we would be able to have access to. So it's not like if it's locked, we can't get in. But that access would be extremely limited in the process of our deployment. We don't want that out there. The good part about these door locks as well is that it does not require any significant modification to our doors that have been recently installed at Old Beth Page, Parkway, Pasadena. So we're looking to do our pilot at Old Beth Page and then look at the other two elementary schools that I just noted as the next, if the pilot goes well, and we really do secure that as the right product. Yep.
So what happens when somebody forgets their ID card or loses their ID card?
Yep, so same thing now, except for if you forget it. The people do lose their ID cards. We stress the significance to our staff, how important these are. These are keys to our building. Do we have the ability? I can sit right there and disable cards right now. Someone reports it, I can disable it. It's just that simple. Same with our student IDs at the high school. If someone loses it, we do have the ability to print it on the spot. We have that. So we will build in those features to be able to deploy that out. But these cards become significant. They become really significant for staff getting into our buildings, getting into classrooms. So we'll have to work through that. But I do not see that as an obstacle whatsoever.
Okay. And just what about our geniuses in the, you know, when we start hacking? Because, you know, look, Anthem, Marriott, Starwood, they've all been hacked. Everyone has probably a letter that they're being paid that, you know, LifeLock is taking care of their Social Security cards.
Right.
The numbers. Are there being built in some firewalls? Are there being from the vendor, not just relying on our own BOCES firewalls?
You know what? I'm not going to I will never mislead you in any way. It's something I'm going to take the opportunity to investigate and get back to the board on. It's valid what you're saying. I'm going to ask. And I'm going to dig whether it's safety's features on our side that are put in place or if it's on both sides with the district and the vendor.
Chris?
Yeah.
Are all the doors in the building, like the gym doors, the cafeteria, they're all going to have this lock on it?
Yeah, so picture this. When you walk through the building, any door that touches the hallway would be done. So we're talking about all closets, all classroom doors, all gym doors that are the double doors that swing, those would be done as well. Every door that touches the hallway. What wouldn't be done in this project is if you have a classroom with a closet within it, that closet within it would remain on the old lock system. And we want it to be that way. We don't want people to be locked out of areas. It's just the focus is from the classroom to the hallway. Those would be taken care of.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Again, our pilot is set to start early January. We have secured the services or in the process of securing the services of someone that I have a lot of confidence to install them and to implement this system. So from what they're telling us, and we spoke to their references in another district, it's going to be a very quick process at our buildings, which is good.
Can I just clarify? Pilot
sure.
Means we're doing the whole building.
Yep.
So it's just not one door lock. We're going to go ahead with all the doors in Old Beth.
And then when we... How long will the pilot run for before we start?
Yeah, so it's again, I don't see this as as a product that we're going to shift and go in a different direction. It really has addressed everything on our side that have been concerns with indicator lights from the inside, with the ability to work offline. So really, what I want to do is working with them. I won't move to the next building until I know all the kinks are worked out of the system at Old Bethpage. With any system you bring online, there is going to be a kink that you have to work through. That is the reality of what we deal with technology, for sure. So that's when I talk about the pilot. That's what I'm referencing. Once I'm comfortable, things have been worked out, then we would move to the next building.
So you're going to do one building at a time? Is that what you're saying?
Yep, one building at a time, and I would see... I mean, I'd want to talk with Rich as far as, you know, setting up the purchase orders to do the other buildings, but I would see it probably be 2 or 3 weeks in between buildings.
Oh, okay, because yep. I don't want to see in September just two buildings having something like this and right. having parents saying, that's not right.
I agree with you. Yep, as quick as we can get them into the buildings without making mistakes is what my goal is.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So our plan is to do the schools that have all of the new doors, Old Beth, Pasadena Parkway, the next school that is getting the new doors, JFK, those doors are already built. So we'll install in JFK.
Correct.
Then Matlin, POB Middle School, and Stratford will all come as quick as possible right behind that because all of those projects have been approved, but those doors have not yet been ordered.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now last two things we'll talk about is entry vestibules as well as reunification quickly. But entry vestibules, we talked at the end of last year to strengthen our vestibule process as far as people entering our buildings, the visitor management. And really, the picture on the upper left-hand portion of here demonstrates really what is going to occur. We're going to build out the current second set of doors that are within the buildings to provide ADA compliance so that there is a 5-foot space between one door that is opening to the back of the second set of doors there. In that vestibule, once you talk to your, you're greeted through the intercom system that'll be connected to the vestibule area. Once you have that conversation, then you will be presented with access to get into the building. The important things to note is all the security features, enhancements that we talked about, the camera systems, the radios, the scholarship, all that stuff still comes into the vestibule that's going to be built out. It's just going to be positioned where you can have that communication one-on-one with the person that will be behind this. It's almost a teller window that is there. So in the lower part of the left-hand part of the screen is really from the inside of the vestibule what it will look like. There are going to be 3 panes of glass when you're in there. 3 panes of glass that you can see from the main office side into the vestibule, only one of the panes of glass that you can see back and forth to the greeter that sits between this area right here. That's where you'll be able to provide your ID, get your identification, and then get access to the building as well. The anticipated start date for this is going to be in the line of December 2019 to January 2020. Realistically, we're working with BBS to finalize our plans for the vestibules, plus the impact that it'll have to the connecting areas within the main office. The submittals to the state are also being timed out. I think we looked at upwards of 6 to 9 months to get projects approved before we can actually bid them out. Those are the realities of our...
It's fast track.
Those are the realities of our...
That's a fast track.
Just for example, we just got approval on Old Beth classrooms last week. That was a full 6 months. Full 6 months on that.
They're not fast-tracking security-related projects, realizing that, you know, given the current climate, those might be a little bit higher priority. They're
at this
just
point,
kinda,
no, they're not.
Ugh.
Unbelievable.
I sent another letter for the... Hopefully the committee is
going to
be very busy.
Yep.
So these are for the elementary schools or any place that we have the already have the double... door vestibule.
Yeah, so the entry vestibules, again, whatever we're going to do in one building, we're going to do in all. So it's all 7 of our buildings would be developed with a plan to have an entry vestibule.
So in Matlin, where we, that would be a complete construction, a completely different kind of construction to the other buildings, correct?
In essence, you're going to build out into that lower lobby area, and then the greeter location would move downstairs to be connected with it, or the person that would be down there. It's not unlike an Old Bethpage, though, to be honest with you, where that second set of doors does not exist. The buildings that'll be a little bit easier are the ones that have those second set of doors, or similar, I should say. The one thing I want to point out is in all of our entry vestibules, there'll be a table for drop-off of items. So if someone has to drop off something, they don't necessarily have to come to a building anymore to do that, to have access. So we can have that open access to drop-off items without opening the doors to our schools.
So, but in Matlin, we have our ADA entrance in C House, and A House is really where our main entrance is. So will there be something have to be done differently in that building?
Yeah, it's a good point that I can talk to the architects about. But in that building, it's unique. There's actually three different floor levels that for access. So you have the handicap ramp in the back. You do have cameras and intercom systems to talk to those that are coming in. But for consistency, I do respect your point. Last thing, and I'll try to wrap this up because I know it's been a long night of reports. I really do want to thank the staff that came to the table to talk about reunification. So, God forbid, if we ever had an emergency where we need to evacuate a building and reunify, match up students with parents, that is a massive task that we want to practice, and we will be practicing at the elementary level. So what does that mean? Reunification. If there were ever a means to evacuate a building, we have to be able to pick up what we have in one building, bring those resources, whether it's staff and students and the technology, to reunite them with the correct people to another building and do that in a safe and secure manner. So that's what we're really talking about. So the charts that are at the bottom of the screen, Judy Jacobs Parkway and Old Bethpage, when they evacuate, they go to their feeder middle schools. So their primary evacuation site would be Matlin Middle School. Their secondary evacuation site would be POB Middle School. Just the reverse for Pasadena and Stratford Road. So in the spring, what we're doing as an administrative team right now is we're working through not only looking at the impact of the building that's being evacuated, but the potential impact to be able to house 400 potential students or more in another building for a time to get them reunited with their parents. So we're looking at a process where it really is going to talk about transportation needs to the reunification site, the notifications to parents and guardians, whether it's website, email, text, robocalls, etc., the student staging areas. How can we keep things as normal as possible for students? How can we develop activities to give them meaningful things to do while we're in the process of reuniting them with? We're also going to set up and talk about parent and guardian check-in locations to verify custodial access to students. We're going to be doing that reunification through card systems and Infinite Campus to be able to make sure all of our current systems and limits that we have are still in place. This will definitely be a task that is going to be all hands on deck, but our goal is to practice this at the elementary level in all four elementary schools in the spring of this upcoming year.
Chris, I have a question.
Sure.
These are ideal situations. We're planning the date, we're planning the time, we're planning the buses.
Correct.
We have childcare before and after school.
Yep.
We have clubs, band, things before and after school.
Mm-hmm.
How do we handle any kind of emergencies with those two groups before and after, where there are no buses, parents drop the kids off, they're on a train going into the city?
Yeah.
What are we going
to
do?
So we're actually trying to build out all of the areas that you're talking about. So they're going to become Cheryl Dender, Joe Braco, all the different areas that we know that function within the day. They're going to be coming to the table to talk about how we can solve that. Realistically, child care is going to be the easiest one to solve. The child care staff can be alerted to come to a different building to operate out of that building until. But we're going to make decisions in the best interest of kids, for sure.
I'm just talking about physically moving those children from one building to another.
Yeah, so
I mean, that's my concern, is that you're dealing with, all ages in that group, from kindergarten to fourth grade, but...
Yep, that's going to require cooperation on the part of We Transport with me. They will be at the table, not at the next, but the subsequent meetings after that, to talk about what's realistic timeline. If I call you on any buses, what can it be, and how can we narrow that timeline down? What I want to also report is Nassau County Police has agreed to work with us during these drills and before the drills to give us guidance of the other districts that have tried this in the past. So not only are they going to help us during the way, but those days that we do that, they're going to be there to assist us. We want to try to make it as real as possible with the resources around us.
And just one other question. I know you said within the classroom there are closets or other spaces that won't have locks.
Yep.
I know when we first started to talk about this last year, I had asked the question about children. I think Ronaldo also said something about autistic children who have to be moved or whatever, and doing things for them very differently. They may make sounds if they're nonverbal and things like that.
Yeah.
We talked about soundproofing a space, or have we thought about how we would handle that population?
We have, yeah. I got to thank Elia Becker and her work of her staff in this area. There's really two focuses, and Elia, if you want to come up and talk about this, you certainly can. But they're working on not only is soundproofing necessary in those rooms, because if we are in a room for an extended period of time, there are going to be challenges we're going to have to work through with sound. So do we need it in those areas? But more importantly, what other things can we put in place to keep those situations as normal as possible for those kids? So are there devices that the kids like to work on that they're going to focus on rather than the emergency or the drill that is happening? Ellie, if you want to comment to that as well, you could possibly do that.
Chris and I have been working closely regarding this topic. Been working with our teachers, with the assistant directors in our 814 classes and two of our special classes. We call them to-go bags, but they're really bags that stay in the class in the advent of some type of an emergency that have items that the students would require, including food, snack foods, and water for reinforcers, because food is a very potent reinforcer for some of our students. In many of the classes, the students have their own iPads, but there are additional iPads, additional chargers, and whatever the teachers have felt, any kind of stress balls, fidget toys, or any toys that would be appropriate. In addition, we have on order bags that the aides will take with them to specials that have somewhat mirror, you know, of these items or somewhat of the items, because we don't know where something may happen. You know, we plan for the ideal in the classroom. You can be in a hallway, you could be in a special. In some of the buildings, some of the specials have boxes already with some items for our students. We've talked about the possibility of soundproofing some of the rooms. One of our rooms is already soundproofed. But, you know, we are working with plans. I'm working with the nurses, medically fragile students, you know, headsets for noise reduction, earbuds to listen. You know, it's, and you know, like we have to over plan, because when we think of that, and each time we do it, we try to think of something else in what we can do to make the best out of a situation that is, it could be, you know, so difficult and so unimaginable.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? So I wait until the end, but I either have four questions or one question with four parts. So however you want to look at it.
All right, here we go.
So I know I've been asking about, and you've addressed some of them in terms of if the power goes out, if the internet goes down. So obviously we have the keyless classroom, and if that's an example of what we're talking about, there is still an area for a key. So I assume that on the what I'm staring at, there's an area. So imagine it's not there.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, there goes one question. So in terms of the, you know, the internet or power going down for scholarship, for example. I know one of the questions I had asked about the way scholarship is now used just for anybody that enters, but also for the students now as they leave and come back and at the high school, and that is assume that the internet goes down, assuming that it's power.
Yeah.
Is it automatically populated with the information as, you know, saved from 20 minutes earlier, or is it automatically shut down?
Yeah, so two parts to that question. So the power in the base of the devices, there is actually a backup battery that exists in both of the systems. It's not going to keep it online for 4 hours. It'll keep it online between 30 and 60 minutes before it needs to get plugged back in. So we have that temporary power source. The system also pulls down information continuously and works off of that, so it does refreshes. Potentially, if the internet connection was broken, it would still work, but it's not going to upload data to their portal or pull down new information. That's the one thing that you always lose with that. But the systems will function.
And if there is power that goes out, let's say there is wire that are cut or internet, does that, I'm assuming, I mean, we have the handheld radios, so that still works.
Yep.
Does it automatically trigger a notification to our security and or police that, hey, power goes down, somebody's cut this? Is that automatically like a sign we need to go and check to make sure everything's okay, or reach out to the building and say everything's okay?
I know that Andy Ward as well as Rich Cunningham get alerts with power.
Okay.
PSE&G will send out alerts that power is either being restored or there's something that is going on in the area with power for sure. Does Nassau County necessarily get those alerts? I can't speak on their behalf, but I'm certainly going to ask if they do get that, what is their procedure to follow up specifically if it's a school?
Gotcha.
Yep.
The lockdown buttons, like fire alarm, like student can walk over, lift it up, and push the button, right?
Correct.
So they're not intended generally for students to pick up and push. But there may be circumstances where students see something and there's no adult around and they lift and, I mean, is there the beginning of a school year? I mean, do we educate, hey, this is when you use this button? Here are the protocols in place?
Yeah, we haven't built it out to the student level. But I don't think that's a bad idea to, as we move forward and start up the year again, or even if we do it at the, you know, the midpoint of this year, to talk about protocol, but only with certain grade levels of students, to be honest with you. I wouldn't recommend that conversation happen necessarily at the elementary level, but maybe it does.
Maybe at the high school level.
Yeah, right. High school level and definitely certain grade levels for the middle school as well. I'd rather have an event where it's something that we conclude to be not a threat rather than someone questions themselves and not hit the button for a response. But also, listen, it's at the same token, too, I don't want this to be a device where it causes panic. So we're going to look into those things. We have camera systems that record. We can definitely address if something's hit, who has hit that button potentially.
The scholar chip ID.
Yep.
Is the picture that you had on one of the slides is a mobile, at least the pictures, that one.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about? That's exactly
that is the device right there. Yep.
Do we have one device?
So we have one device, yep, for sure.
So how much, just curious, how much it slows the amount of students that leaves, how long it takes compared to before, same thing on the return, I don't know what the cost is, but does it make sense to have two of the devices? It just seems like it would slow it down significantly, the amount of people that go in and out, and that would impact time as well.
Yeah, from what we've seen so far, and I can, you know, kick to Jim to get his feedback on this, but I haven't had any reports of it slowing down. It's pretty quick. I mean, as quick as you can get there. Obviously, it's not going to be a system where you're just walking out a door because you have access. You're going to have to stop to scan your card to get that, you know, to get that confirmation. But it's quick. It the system moves. It was actually quicker than I thought it would work, to be honest. If you potentially use this for all building attendance to bring students in the morning, it doesn't make sense to just have one device. Right. But for off campus, where it's working right now, I don't see it as slowing down a process.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I mean, are students returning late? Are you having like reports that returning late that and they're saying, hey, you know, it's because I'm waiting online, you know?
The line hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long. It's not an instantaneous thing of them touching the screen. It's almost like they have to like rub it in the right spot a little bit. I think it's also them getting used to the system.
It's like kind of walking into like a baseball field. It may take a second for it to scan the ticket.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, and then the last question I think is more in Rich's field, and that is in terms of timing and financial. I know the vestibules, that was already voted on by the taxpayers in the capital from use of the capital reserves, right? So that's earmarked. So regardless of when we get the approval, there's no issues in terms of money, in terms of expending that. And some of that's aidable? All aidable. And then the last piece is, so Stratford is, as I've come to learn, a historical building that requires additional hoops to jump through.
Not anymore.
Oh,
we talked that one off the table.
Okay.
No longer historical.
So the delay of getting all these and all the hoops is now a lot easier.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
I want to really thank you for this report. Every time you give a report, I feel a little safer.
Thank you.
And I hope we never have to use any of
Me
it.
Me too.
Just a quick question. I had heard from a couple of parents, and this may or may not be true, that in some locations, the area that's marked off for the students to go to when we have a situation was not large enough to accommodate all the students. Have you heard that?
I have not, but I can certainly... Yeah, I can certainly look into that for sure.
I have.
Yeah.
Okay. So, thank you.
Gotcha.
I have a question about scholarship when students scan in the morning. I want to specifically note Parkland because that perpetrator was a student who had been expelled for violent behavior, was not supposed to be in the building. So theoretically, let's just say something like that were to happen here, and it was a student who had already had their ID card, and they mm-hmm. came back to the building 3 or 4 days after they were suspended or expelled, tried to scan into the building. Mm-hmm. What kind of alert?
So just to clarify, students aren't scanning into the building. This system is solely for the purposes of monitoring off-campus privileges. So it's used when the children go out for off-campus, and then the kids that go out in 11th and 12th, they scan back in. The system has the capability to do full student attendance every morning when the kids come in. But right now, it's just used for off-campus privileges.
Well, it's just a comment because the report was not just comprehensive. It was just incredible.
Thank you.
So I give you kudos for putting in so much time and effort and giving us so much information. Thank
More
you.
Than
to
welcome.
To know that our kids are that safe, that's all we need. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ronelle. Echo, Ronelle. I mean, the amount of time and effort that you have put this together, I mean, I wish there was more people from the community here. I would like to share this report. I have a Facebook page. But could you also send me the link? Because that Sandy Hook was so moving. I think the community should see it. And I would appreciate it if you could share that with me. Thank you very much. I mean,
no problem.
Chills.
But we will have this presentation on our website, right?
They're all, this one will go up tomorrow, but all of our security presentation, there's a link on the front of our website. No problem at all. Thank you.
We're now going into public participation. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall 1. State their name and address, and 2. Indicate on whose behalf they're speaking, if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which the reputation, privacy, or due rights, okay?
You got it? Perfect.
Or those of others could in some way be violated. As a reminder, an audio recording of this meeting, including public participation, is being made and will be posted on the district's website. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. The floor is open.
It is on. Nina Melzer, PCT president. Just a quick question on the locks. If we go into automatic lockdown, can the teachers, if they have a situation in their classroom, can they unlock the door from the inside?
Absolutely. Okay. So the doors, per code, you cannot have it not open from the inside. So the door on the inside, just like any other lock, you can grab it. It'll unlock it, even with the privacy lock that's pushed in as well. Yeah, okay. You can unlock and get out.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Any other questions?
Good evening. Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive. I understand the board has authorized me to represent them at the BOCES budget study.
Yay. They're anticipating.
Of course, if any board member wants to join me, there'll be plenty of room. I will endeavor to keep the board informed, as I have in the past, and to keep you up to date. If anybody has any questions, just email them to me, and we'll try to get all the budgetary questions answered. In the meanwhile, let me wish everyone here who's observing Passover a Hanukkah.
You're pushing.
I'm rushing the season. I just want to wish you a
the same to you and your
Hanukkah.
Family. And thank you again for helping us. Thank you. Anyone else? Hearing none, public participation is closed. Thank you, Jacques. Do I have a motion on routine business? Debbie, second. Jody, any hold, separation, discussion? All in favor of routine business? And I believe we have one item of... Yes. Ah. Is there a motion, please, for the board to approve a high school athletic trip to ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut on December 8th? Susan, second. Rennell, any discussion holds? All in favor? He wants to go. May I have a motion to go into executive session? Yes. For reason of personnel and real estate. Debbie, second. Lauren, all in favor? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Enjoy your night. A demographic report.